What are we starting with this week?
I don't know. I'm not going to even guess this week.
A Spotify update.
Wrong. We're starting with thanking our lovely patrons for being patrons on our Patreon.
Oh, thank you, patrons.
Patreon.com/SciGuys.
That's where you can be a patron with other patrons.
Shall we start the
Patreon.
Show?
Patreon.
Patreon.com/SciGuys.
Shall we start the show?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Jem and Luke Cutforth and special guest Dodi.
Hey! Hey!
Thanks guys. Ah, hello. Hello.
This week we're going to be talking about DDD.
DDD?
DDD.
Interesting. DPDR? DPRD? Depersonalization, derealization, dissociation, chronic association. There's so many names for it.
Dodie's right. Yeah, Dodie's got it.
Another round of applause. Well,
not sure if I was following.
So it's like I've lived with this for 10 years.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about depersonalization, derealization disorder, or any of the other names that it has, because our patrons voted for that this month. And so we thought we'd bring on Dodie, who...
has it. Really bad. Has it, and because I have it, has done so much research, and yeah, I've read a lot about it. Yeah.
I was going to say knows a lot about it, and also the patrons specifically asked for Dodie, but yeah, that too.
Cool.
Shall we start
off? Don't say we don't treat you. We listen.
So what is depersonalization, derealization disorder? Do you guys know? Do you two know?
I think we should. Oh, not Dodie then. I suppose.
Well, I mean, Dodie knows. I know
no,
that
go
Dodie
on,
knows.
Go on.
Is it the feeling of spaciness, like you're not connected to the real world, and you feel kind of like you're observing and not really doing anything?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, that's...
Sounds like
that's
dreaming.
No. I mean, look, why don't we start from the start?
Go on then.
Right? Because that's a fair
you
understanding.
You asked.
I did ask. So it's dissociative disorder. We've spoken about dissociative disorders before, haven't we? Do you guys remember that?
DID.
Yeah, like DID. Mm. So they all kind of come under the same umbrella of dissociative disorders. If you're going to search this, you'll basically find it saying that dissociative disorders are a range of conditions that can cause physical and psychological problems, which, yeah, like essentially with all of these, they can essentially cause further sort of further mental disorders because of how, I guess, stressful they are. Mm. Essentially, dissociation is a way that the mind copes with stress. And depersonalization is, as we'll find out today, underreported and under-researched. There's just very little on it, really.
Yeah. Yeah, if you search for depersonalization, you probably found a forum called, I think it's like DPD Self-Help. And it's just, like, it's obviously great that it's a community, but it's quite sad. It's just a lot of people being like, hey guys, I've been spaced out for like 20 years now. Had it when I smoked weed. Anyone found that 5-HTP helps? And then like someone will reply and be like, no.
Really? Yeah, no, honestly, the way that I do these episodes, when it's about sort of like these conditions and disorders, usually I will like, I'll look at the NHS, I'll see what the NHS says. The NHS doesn't have a page for this specific disorder. Mm. There is dissociative disorders and they're all kind of lumped into one. Then I'll go to my psychopathology book, which has all of the information you could need. Again, all of these are lumped into one because there's not sort of specific treatment that we know works. We don't know the causes specifically as well as we do with other disorders. And honestly, we just have not done very much research on it. Like I was looking for the research. Some of it's there, but honestly, it is not as robust as you see with everything
which
else.
Which is
really
wild when you think about the fact that I think 1% of people have depersonalization. And yeah, that's quite a big figure. And to put that in perspective, that's about how many people are diagnosed with like schizophrenia or OCD around the country. Mm. And think of how many resources there are for that.
Yeah, I've seen up to 2% as well. So like, again, like 1% is, that's one of those estimates where we actually just...
And that's like diagnosed, I think. Mm. Don't quote me. But like, I'm sure, Luke, I know you've had like a few symptoms of it, right? I think people experience the feeling quite regularly. Mm. It's definitely like a very common symptom.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to ask, is that I've had experiences where if I'm particularly stressed or hurt by a situation, I kind of detach from the world and I go silent and everyone else notices I go silent and I like it's like I'm processing. It's like I'm buffering or something. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then I'm like trying to figure out what's going on like this. Mm. And then I'll suddenly come back and everything's absolutely fine. Mm. It's like I completely shut down and detach. But I don't feel like the world carries on without me.
That sounds maybe a little more like dissociation. So dissociation is when I think it's more of a temporary feeling. It's what you experience when you're maybe panicking, or like maybe after shock, like if you've been in a car crash or seen an accident or something, and you feel like you're watching your body, or like you're sort of stunned, like you feel like you're dreaming, like you kind of feel numb to the situation. Like that's a feeling of dissociation. It'll usually pass. I'm sure you've all like experienced that feeling, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's very similar. Like a lot of people experience that sensation when they're jet lagged or when they're panicked. When they just can't quite connect. A lot of people, like when they're hungover. Actually, a lot of people experience it when smoking weed or maybe the aftermath of weed. That's how a lot of people got depersonalization. They'll get it after smoking weed and it will just hang around, sometimes forever.
So what would you say is... if what I described is not really it, what would you just say is... like? Because if you said I had experienced it, or a similar thing, like how would you describe it?
That sounds like it. The fact that you can like snap back is makes it like dissociation, I think. Whereas derealization, I'll go in terms of labels. Like derealization is the feeling that you're dreaming and you're not in the real world.
Oh,
like the world around you feels fake, which is what I have. I actually have both, but we'll talk about derealization. It's when it's like, oh, I feel like I can't like break through like into this world. I just don't know where I am. Like it's all very confusing. And depersonalization is when it goes so far to feel like you're not in your own body. Like you don't recognize your hands. You don't recognize faces.
Oh, wow.
A lot of memories seem really, like really cloudy and in the back of my mind. Like I feel like there's a distinct line in my life when I got depersonalization when I was around 18 after like a traumatic year. My brain just like... like it felt like something was unplugged and suddenly I'd like lost a sense. It feels like there's like a line in my life, like the before and after of being spacey, and all of my memories in life before was all right, just clear how it should be. Mm. I actually did find, I'm talking a lot, but
that's why you're here.
All
right. I found evidence of me having like little moments of being spaced out when I was younger. I found a diary entry when I went on holiday when I was like 14. And I'm writing and I'm so excited. I'm like, can't wait to be here. But it feels like I'm in a dream and it's really annoying. And I don't know why, but I'm sure this feeling will go away. And then like, I think the next day I'm like, I feel better. Like I'm on the beach, it's fine. But like, it's interesting to see it like kind of poke through. It clearly has been my brain's like natural reaction to stress. And then after a certain year, I feel like it just kind of like tipped over the edge and now I can't come back.
This sounds off. It's very interesting to hear you say this because this is like, textbook almost, like as in when I say textbook, I mean I was literally reading a textbook earlier.
Yeah,
and like, yeah, that is the most astute, accurate description I've heard.
It's wild because it's so isolating. Like I remember in the first like 5 years of having it, I had no idea what it was. I thought it was connected to my depression. I thought it was depression, and I had depression as well as a side effect. So do lol. Because with all mental health problems, like they kind of like. One can affect the other. Mm. It's also known that depression can cause derealization. Like sometimes if you're, too depressed, then your brain can like space out as a way to deal with it. Also sometimes, you know how like panic and depression can go hand in hand as well. It's a nasty cocktail of mental health problems. But I can't remember what I was talking about. What was I talking about?
You're talking about how it took you a few years to realize that's what it was.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I was trying to do all these research. I got my eyes tested loads. I thought I was like losing my vision because it feels like you can't open your eyes wide enough. Like I remember when it was happening, I just kept trying to be like this. I feel like I have like a sort of vignette around my vision used to feel like that. Yeah, so actually glasses make it so much worse, but I like wearing them because when I take them off, it gives the effect that I'm back, kind of.
Yeah.
So I like wear them now and again, and then when I take them off, it's like, there's just like no information about it at all. It took me so long to find a name for it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head, of course, I'll just go over it again, literally from what the NHS is saying, which is pretty much exactly what you've said, that depersonalization is the feeling of being outside yourself, sort of observing your actions, or feelings or thoughts, all of that from a distance. And then derealization is the world being unreal. Yeah.
Which one are we talking about?
Sorry. Both.
Yeah, it's
both.
Hard. Like, just, yeah, just, both.
I've heard people who've had incredibly traumatic experiences have like an out, like what you said, but depersonalization, I think, where you literally have like an out of body experience and you observe yourself from above. Is that like that?
I've read many different things. So, I mean, actually, again, what's really interesting is that what you said is like, I've seen literally that written in sort of textbooks of also like people feeling like they're in a movie or in a film or in a game.
Yeah, I've had that. That was awful.
Or, oh, yeah, right.
I was in the Truman Show for like a good week.
Oh, no.
I was like, where's the camera?
Yeah. I sometimes like genuinely freak out, like have moments where I'm so out of it. I let my mind wander and I'm like, oh my God, none of my friends are real. Like I can't even remember them. Like who am I? I just like have this weird freak out of like, I'm either in a simulation or the other day I was like, oh God, like we're characters in a book. Like I've made these people up. Yeah. Like well, you just get so out of it.
That feels like, I've been talking to a friend about this recently. This might sound a little trippy, so be warned. But like, I was talking to a friend about sort of theory of mind in psychology, which I don't have any formal psychology training, so take this with a pinch of salt. But my understanding of it is that in sort of childhood development, you sort of, at some point, I think in your first couple of years, make the sort of realization that people outside of yourself have their own mind and that you're not the only thing that exists and that you're not just having experience. The other people have their own life, right? And that when they leave your vision, they continue to exist and stuff can happen that you don't necessarily know about. And the thing that I find so weird about that, especially when I've had these feelings exactly like you're explaining, where it feels like the world's not real or like I'm just a brain having an experience and nothing else is real, is that the reason that's so insidious is that I also can't prove any of those things. I can't prove that anyone else is real. I can't prove that I'm not just dreaming. And also when I'm having a dream, that feels very real. And then when I wake up from the dream, it's like, well, obviously that was a dream and I was doing all of it. So then I go, what if that's what's happening now?
Literally, right. Yeah. And I feel like if you have depersonalization, you're prone to these thoughts like so much more because you're constantly thinking about it. Like I'm spaced out in my dreams now. I remember there was a time when my dreams felt realer than normal life because I didn't experience the feeling of depersonalization when I was dreaming. And then I think it just got so bad that I crossed the line and now it is that as well. I can barely remember it. It's horrible to think so existentially like all the time. Just well, like,
I mean, I've heard that is existential OCD as well. There's a form of OCD where your brain is obsessively trying to find answers to questions that don't have answers.
Right.
Which is like,
I think what happens a lot with all of these things, there is so much overlap. So you're talking about sort of theory of mind and how sort of mismatching that in your head can lead to certain problems. That's also there in, I think, autism with ADHD and like lots of sort of neurodivergence, like your theory of mind can be affected. And when it comes to sort of like asking these existential questions and being stuck on that, like, I mean, it being there with sort of, let's say DDD, just because it's easier to say, that being there with DDD and also existential OCD, I mean, all of these sort of syndromes are sort of syndromes, disorders are all like overlapping symptoms. And we're really sort of splitting them out into basically based on like certain collections of them. So for example, with DDD,
I think maybe DPD.
DPD?
Yeah.
DPD?
DPD.
With DPD. So with DPD, the issue is that like, because it's present with so many other things, like you can have it come about from PTSD, depression, anxiety. Literally, when diagnosing it, you need to separate it out from those. Because otherwise, you can't necessarily diagnose it as DPD because it could just be, oh, this is just a symptom of your anxiety. This is just a symptom of your depression. But then also, DPD itself can cause depression.
Yeah.
But are those things real or are they just labels of a collection of symptoms?
Yes.
Okay. Which one? The second one?
Yes.
They're labels on a collection of symptoms.
So they are real and labels of... So nothing is real.
No.
See you next week. Come on.
Except for your experience, right? What your experience... Like you were saying, you can't prove that anything outside of your sort of... You can't prove that anyone else's sort of minds are real outside of your experience.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if you're asking yourself those questions, doesn't matter. which sucks, right? It sucks to hear. It doesn't matter whether it is real or isn't real. You were talking about this the other day, right? If you're in a dream, it doesn't matter whether the dream is real or not real. You're experiencing it.
No, sorry. Right? What I mean, though, is that is depersonalization or is derealization as or is ADHD a thing, or is it a label you put on where it's like, okay, we've kind of ruled out these things, so we're going to call it this thing. Or we see you've got this group of things, so we're going to call it that thing.
I know you can get a diagnosis of depersonalization.
No, I understand that completely.
So, Luke's question is essentially like,
Is it Tourette's where you have to outrule everything else to get the diagnosis?
His question is essentially, are these things that actually exist? Like, for example, let's say influenza is a virus that you get and that causes influenza. Or is it just a collection of symptoms that we call something like, say, the common cold?
Oh, right? Wow.
So it's more like the common cold than it is influenza, right? Because there are so many different... This is the issue.
Obviously, it doesn't make it
I've
not
never
real.
Really I just thought about this. Like,
I just mean
how
like,
to you're, define a
yeah,
condition.
Like you're presenting with X symptoms. When X symptom is joined with this symptom and is sort of joined with this symptom and this symptom and this other one isn't present, we call that DPD.
Oh, interesting.
Or when you're presenting with this and this and this and not these things, we call that schizophrenia. That's what I was asking, and it sounds like that's.
Well, I mean, brains are complex, right? Like we don't
necessarily know what causes these things either. That's
the
problem.
Yeah, we do and don't. I think the thing is actually, I was reading this. We did our DID episode, and a lot of people were understandably upset because I was hesitant to say, sort of prescriptively, childhood trauma causes DID, and the reason I was hesitant to say that is because. As I was reading the other day, we don't have a strict causal relationship between it. Yeah. We have a strong corollary relationship. Like we've noticed that in I think in over 90% of cases of people with DID, they have childhood trauma, and actually with DPD as well, there's a heavy correlation between sort of some traumatic event and DPD. But we haven't necessarily figured out like this is how this leads to that. You know, I mean, we think that essentially what happens is. You go through trauma and you can kind of, your brain wants to kind of separate itself. Your mind kind of wants to separate itself from the traumatic event. So it's like, this isn't happening to me. Mm. It's actually happening to someone else. Mm. So I'm going to separate myself from that. But the brain does it too well. And it's like, now how do I get back in?
Yeah.
It's like, it's locked the door. It's lost the key.
But then that other character you invent continues to exist and continues to do things and thinks things just separate to you.
Mm.
If you lock off a whole portion of your brain and say, this isn't happening to me, this section of the brain, it's happening to, I'll give this section of the brain a different name.
I guess that is the idea, right? Whereas depersonalization is more disconnecting from reality. I remember, I don't know, I haven't read it. There's a book that's about the mind and the body, like the connection. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can remember it. But there is a section on it that suggests that your brain is constantly in a state of thinking that it's going to die. So it's like just disconnected completely so that you can survive and not panic. It's like, I guess, almost like a state of shock. Like, it is a protection. It's supposed to be protecting you from stress. The problem is, I don't want it. I don't need it. Like, let me get back.
I mean, that makes sense. So this is what I find interesting when we talk about anything like this, in that you're saying it is a protection from stress. And that is true of, I mean, that is true of most of these sort of things. So if you've got depression, if you've got anxiety, the reason that people are like, oh, I'm feeling anxious or I'm feeling depressed, when they don't have clinical depression or anxiety, it's because people do feel depressed and anxious because those are emotional responses to certain stimuli. The issue with people that have got depression or anxiety is that they can't regulate those responses to stimuli and they get it to the wrong stuff. With PTSD, for example, you go through trauma and so you start having a trauma response to things that aren't traumatic. Same with DPD. And actually, I think literally every single person listening to this will have experienced some kind of dissociation. Because it's a normal thing to experience. Like literally, if you ever woken up, right? Wake up and you're like, where am I? What is going on? You don't know who you are. You don't know what's going on. And then suddenly you snap back. You're like, yeah.
Oh, it's my room.
That is a normal kind of...
I don't know what it's like to snap back. Oh. I'm sorry.
that is the sort of normal dissociation to feel. I feel really bad.
Oh my god! Sorry, no, it's true. It's like yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're feeling tired, it can happen. So there's different. So I say that a bunch of different dissociative disorders get lumped in together. Mainly it's the three, DPD, DID, and I think it's dissociative amnesia. And yeah, and you kind of experience, like, again, like I said, you do experience all these things, like, at all, like, at some point during your life. Mm-hmm. If there's a traumatic event, like if you see a car crash, you might pull yourself out of your, like, out of your body a little bit. You're like, oh, to kind of remove yourself from the situation. All of these things you can experience sort of without having the disorder. The disorder is just, oh, it happened too much, right? Like,
yeah,
it doesn't stop when it should, which is why I'm kind of saying they are real, but they're also like a collection of symptoms, right?
Oh yeah, I want to be very clear. I'm in no way invalidating.
Oh yeah.
The validity of the symptoms and how horrible it is. Mm-hmm. And the idea that whether the label is real in the way the common cold is, in the way that influenza is real, or real in the way being like having diarrhea or having the cold is real, is sort of irrelevant in everyday speech. It's just an interesting thing to me where we sort of put a noun on something in order to make it real. Mm-hmm. But obviously the experience, like you said, the experience is the same whether it's a collection of symptoms or whether it's an individual thing causing it. Just as real, absolutely.
So speaking of symptoms, should we go over just really briefly the symptoms of DPD?
Please. Yeah.
So I'm just going to rattle these off. The symptoms of dissociative disorders in general, so this is just in general, they can vary, obviously, but here are just some of them. Feeling disconnected from yourself and the world around you, forgetting about certain time periods, events, and personal information, feeling uncertain about who you are, having multiple distinct identities, feeling little or no physical pain, and those are essentially those symptoms, right? Those are for dissociative disorders in general. But as we've said, with DPD, it's specifically the derealization and depersonalization. Mm-hmm. And these sort of periods of, like, let's say periods of dissociation, they can be short. They can last for like a short period of time, or they can last for sort of weeks or months.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who experience it alongside a panic attack, and so it can kind of last as a way to kind of like save them from it for like maybe a week, or maybe a few months at a time. There have been stories of people who get it for like bouts of months, maybe bouts of years, and then get relief from it. Mm. But there are a lot of people who have it constantly, like me.
This is a thing constantly as well. I mean, it says it can last for years, but usually if someone has other dissociative disorders, but then there's so many, like there's such a wide ranging sort of spectrum
there's
of
also,
this.
I have a friend who has epilepsy, and she, every time, the time surrounding a seizure, she experiences derealization because it is in the similar part of the brain that causes dissociation or derealization. Yeah, fascinating.
That is really interesting. I have actually seen that epilepsy has come up a lot in my reading.
There was a study, there was like one King's College study, I think, that was trying to find a drug cure, and they combined sertraline and lamotrigine, which I think is a drug for curing epilepsy, and it seemed to have a 50% success rate.
That is really strong. Mm. I mean, given that there are very few studies on actual
treatments. 50% of the people said that they think that they felt better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of, not like bosh done. I think it was but obviously it's so vague as well. Like, who knows? And also because it's so mental, like obviously placebo is gonna affect that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely could. I think this is a thing as well we're looking at, is to try and find out. So we have actually done some studies on sort of the area of the brain that sort of lights up during these sort of episodes, which is why we've been able to try and make some treatments for it. But again, we're such early doors. I mean, to put this in perspective, right? For treating depression, you guys know this. We've spoken about this already. You might know this. We don't know really how antidepressants work. Really, we're not super sure. You know, we're like, these have an effect, so we'll keep on using them. Mm. That's where we're at with, say, depression, which I would argue is one of the most common, one of the most well known.
Everyone knows about depression.
The first thing to come to my mind was diseases of the mind. Was the,
wow.
What's the word? Jeez,
mental health?
Diseases of the mind.
Sounds like the start of like an 80s dance track. Diseases of the mind.
I'm thinking like a murder mystery novel or something. Diseases of the mind.
So yeah, it's one of the most well-known and well-studied ones. We've even got models of it in mice and rats. And we still don't really know how to treat it. And so with DPD, it's like, okay, we're really far behind. But like looking at where we are with everything else, we're not that much farther behind.
Why do you, obviously there might not be an answer, an easy answer, but like can you hypothesize on why the if it's got similar rates as Dodie mentioned, as like schizophrenia, for example, why there is so much less research done on it? Is it because it's like it doesn't affect the economy as much?
Okay.
It's so hard to describe. I think that's what is a problem. Uh-huh. It also, yeah, blends under so many other mental health problems. Mm. And it's so like it's so hard to see as well. Like you can't like to everyone else watching this, like they'll never be able to see what I see unless you're spaced out. Like I look completely normal. Mm. And I sound completely normal because I can function very well with this because I've had it for so long. Mm. So yeah, it's really hard to like get across, really.
That's literally what I was going to say. I mean, if you see someone that's depressed, it can often be not easy, but it's rather possible to tell that someone is depressed because
visibly,
yeah. Because suddenly they're not able to do stuff, but they seem physically fine. Mm-hmm. If someone's anxious, they're like on edge all the time. If someone has ADHD, well, you've seen Noah on the podcast.
He's always pushing the buttons.
He gets a button to press every episode. Yeah, no, but it, you know what I mean? If someone has DID, they've got like you could potentially experience them switching between different sort of alters. Mm. Someone has schizophrenia, they will be acting like apparently erratically. Mm-hmm. Right, you can see so many differences in behavior with all of these different sort of mental health issues or disorders. Whereas I think with DPD, it's like, what is there to see? You know what I mean? From sort of the outside.
And reminds me of, I can't remember what we were talking about once, where there was a mental health condition we were talking about where the people who were describing it weren't believed by their own doctors. They were told that they were like making it up.
DID. Mm. Probably DID.
Really?
It's probably DID. Wow. But okay, right. If you think about this from the perspective of someone who has never heard of any of this, who has never experienced it really, other than say waking up and being like, "Where am I?" and being like, "Oh, here I am." If Dodie was to kind of just explain what she goes through, then it'd be like,
yeah.
Well,
mate, if I was younger and I heard me saying this, I'd be like, "Oh my god, she's desperate for attention. Desperate. Mm. She's really? Making up." Oh yeah, I would not have believed it at all. Fully. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I mean there's that aspect as well. I mean, I think it was first described in the late 19th century.
Oh, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in like so much poetry. Like even reading, I can't remember if it was Sylvia Plath or not, but like reading like even a portion of her book, there's clearly like so many elements of it. Maybe I'm like projecting, but you know, there are moments where she's like, "I don't recognize my hands at all." And I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Representation I crave.
No, I think that's really interesting because I mean that experience can be brought on by drug use as well. Like so it is an experience that people have gone through throughout history. Mm. And it does make sense that there, because it's not necessarily something other than sort of the other sort of mental like sort of health issues it can bring on. Mm. It's not something that will necessarily sort of impact your sort of life expectancy. So someone could be a fairly, like, say, a successful sort of author or poet and write about these experiences without actually having the sort of medical backing for it.
Mm. Dodie's a successful author and poet. Just sings her poems.
Mm.
When you say that you don't recognize your hand, do you mean my hand doesn't usually look like this, or you look at your hand and you don't feel a sense of I?
Yeah, it's just a hand. It's not mine.
Ah. It doesn't belong to you.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I just, it just like an object doesn't feel there. Like my hand. Yeah. I mean, that's if I'm really bad. I actually find that looking at my hands is very helpful for me because if something is closer to my vision, I feel like I can concentrate on it more. And then if I look up, then it's just very overwhelming. I'm just like, Yeah.
I've had moments where I'm like, this is just a chimp's hand.
Right.
Yeah, a monkey. I've been with you and you've been like, what am I? I'm just a chimp.
I'm a monkey. That's it.
I don't know what that is. It's not depersonalization. It's madness.
Okay, so I mean, we could just talk about the causes. I mean, really briefly.
Wow, you actually did do your research.
Oh, this is my book. This is my psychopathology book.
Wow.
I could literally go through pages and pages of what we think. Mm. But if I say what we know, I'm not really sure. Yeah. it's basically trauma. The sort of going theory. The going theory is a traumatic event. And bear in mind, traumatic event can be anything.
Yeah.
Anything can be traumatic, even if it doesn't necessarily seem like it should be, or feel at the time like it is. Like an entire sort of year could be traumatic, an experience, a single experience could be traumatic. Just going through sort of period of bereavement with a family member could be an incredibly traumatic thing.
The irony is, like, with derealization, you might disconnect from the situation in the moment and not even really feel that bad because you're spacing out already, so you don't even know if it is traumatic until, years go by and you realize that it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that actually touches on something that, I mean, there is the sort of theory that it comes from a sort of repression in that there is a traumatic event. And so through sort of repressing that, you can disconnect yourself from yourself, essentially. And so, I mean, that's where some treatments kind of go to kind of try and unlock that. And I mean, you'll see that, I mean, I guess that's sort of, kind of like PTSD or dissociative amnesia, when people go through a traumatic event in childhood and don't remember it. Mm. It's just entirely repressed. Mm. So you can see how all of these things are sort of related. And you've probably noticed that, I mean, throughout this, we've been speaking about depression and anxiety and PTSD because they're all very closely linked. Like, I mean, it's the same with, like, sorry, we talk about comorbidities. So when we were talking about ADHD, we were talking about how people with ADHD end up getting depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Same with DPD. You can end up getting depression and anxiety. If you've got PTSD, you can get DPD. It is not like, we like to think of all of these sort of mental health issues as sort of clear cut, like, I have this and I have that. But actually...
And only this. But a lot of the time there's extra.
They can morph into each other.
Yeah. I mean, the way that the brain is sort of like all interconnected, that's how you can't think of these sort of things as being distinct, separate things. Mm-hmm. Because that's just not really how your brain works, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say one of the causes we think is trauma, because it feels like pretty much all of the things we've listed in this show are in some way caused by trauma.
I will say the weed thing is a very real thing. Mm. Like, a lot of people smoke weed and then get depersonalization
in their non-weedy life.
Yeah, so they smoke it, experience depersonalization, and then that's it. Like, it's turned on.
Do you think
that's like schizophrenia?
Yeah, I was going to say that to me sounds like schizophrenia. Where I think this might be.
I didn't know that.
So I'm not.
Well, that's the thing. So there is, like, as far as I read, and this was a while ago. As far as I read, it's not easy to tell the difference in the data between smoking cannabis, especially at a young age, and then later going on to develop schizophrenia, or having underlying tendency towards schizophrenia, so smoking weed to cope with the fact that's how your world feels.
Right.
And you...
I will say, we know that, like, brain stuff is about making patterns, right? So I feel like if you're smoking enough weed or doing whatever, like, going down that route of spacing out is probably, a good way for it to start.
I mean, it's not just, the thing is, weed is, I think, probably because it's one of the most common drugs, but also, I mean, if you when you're looking at all the papers, there are a lot of drugs that can kind of trigger it as well.
Yeah, ketamine, apparently. I saw that TikTok. they gave rats like ketamine or something and could study like which part of their brain shut down or like spaced out or something like that. So
I mean, it is that is really interesting, because that was one of the things I was going to bring up about schizophrenia. That, I mean, sort of going through it, at least the most sort of common thing that was said is that if you have an underlying tendency towards schizophrenia, smoking marijuana can trigger that. But it is really interesting that what you said, because I hadn't heard that before, that we don't know if it's a corollary
Interesting
causational sort of thing.
Yeah, because you might, that underlying feeling of being like on the verge of schizophrenia might lead you to seek an escape from that in weed, and then also then might trigger your latent schizophrenia.
Mm. Yeah,
like we. I don't
Nothing's
know.
Black or white, isn't it?
It's really not
nuanced.
This is the thing with when it comes to the brain, what you feel is intuitive. It's not necessarily how it works. Like it may feel so intuitively right. Brains are very complicated.
Yeah, I will also say I met someone who said that they also experienced spacing out of periods of time, but happened after they had really happy moments or like moments where like it was too much to take in.
Wow.
I think it's just a response to like being overwhelmed.
Overstimulation.
Like, yeah, for sure.
I think trauma is probably one of the, so when you go through a traumatic event, it kind of switches you kind of start using your amygdala. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, a traumatic event is something that is very, it can overwhelm you very easily, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas something that's very happy can overwhelm you, but it's probably harder to overwhelm yourself with happiness than it is to overwhelm yourself with.
Probably,
what
yeah.
is the opposite of trauma?
Oh,
what's
the
experience of like having just the most ludicrously great thing happen to you?
Joy, gratitude. Well, I don't know.
This is the thing, because trauma isn't necessarily. This is a difficult question. I think. Right?
Is it bad? What is bad?
No, really,
such a good experience that then everything else felt really rubbish in comparison.
Truly, maybe
that's a form that would be like traumatic.
Basically,
trauma is a kind of like is kind of a harm done, right? But as we all know. Harm doesn't need to come necessarily from something that is bad. Something you think could be good for you can harm you. For example, mm-hmm. I have a nice big bottle of water here. It is good for me. We all agree that me drinking water is a good thing, right?
Don't drink too much.
Well, don't drink too much. Yeah. And let's say I was an athlete. Let's say I was going to drink a lot while I was running. There are a lot of cases of athletes basically kind of not going into necessarily water toxicity, but having too much water in their systems because they're not able to excrete it fast enough because they're over drinking.
What?
And so something that is good for you can be, in this sense, sort of traumatic. So yeah, I mean, what is trauma? It's too much of, what is a bad thing is essentially like just something that is too much, right? And anything can be too much. Just depends what that level is. Mm. I mean, and so just quickly, segue onto diagnosis, right? Because I find this interesting. It's something that we always talk about whenever we talk about something like this. When we're diagnosing it, us personally, because we're all doctors, for everyone listening, we're not. Oh my god, no, we're not doctors. You can't take our advice. Please don't. So diagnosis, right? Like I said, it's one of those things that we talk about very often. When you're diagnosing DPD, you basically have to rule out everything else. So this is sort of the summary from the DSM 5. essentially, these are the criteria to diagnose someone. So if you're going to be diagnosed with it, with DPD, your sort of doctor will basically see how you match up against these criteria. So recurring occurrences of depersonalization, derealization, or both causing significant distress or impairment in important areas of functioning. That is my favorite thing in every single diagnosis. It causing distress or impairment in important areas of functioning. Because so many of these different things, right? They can be experienced. They can be experienced in sort of other sort of situations. So, like we said, with drug use, right? Someone could use some kind of drug and go through this kind of experience, but we wouldn't class that as a disorder. Someone could have a spiritual experience. Someone could be meditating. That's another sort of situation where you can experience these sort of feelings. Meditation. We wouldn't class that as a disorder. Disorders are literally things that impede your normal functioning. Mm. And so you can have all of these sort of symptoms. If it doesn't impede your normal functioning, then it would be difficult to get a diagnosis. So depersonalization, experiences, like as we said, experiences of detachment outside the body, outside the observation of one's own thoughts, feelings, body, or actions, and derealization, experiences of detachment with regard to surroundings. And during the occurrences, the individual is still able to distinguish what is real from what is not. That's a key point because let's say if you've got psychosis and you're struggling to differentiate what is real from what isn't real, you could confuse these symptoms for those symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. Like a really important part of diagnosing DPD is that you know what is real and what isn't real. You just feel sort of detached from it, essentially. Mm. It's not, and another one here, it's not directly due to the use of a substance. So if it's due to substance abuse, then it's not strictly diagnosed as DPD. Obviously, if you've sort of stopped using said substance, says drug, and it continues on past that, you probably would be diagnosed. And the disorder, the one that we get with literally every single thing we talk about, the disorder is not better accounted for by another mental disorder such there as schizophrenia, panic disorder, or major depressive disorder. Yeah.
So you have to prove it's none of those.
Yeah, it's essentially ruling. Yeah, yeah. Okay. With I mean, and we've done so many things like OCD, ADHD.
Yeah,
the last line is always that it's not better accounted for by something else, which is what we were talking about. All of these symptoms sort of overlap. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can talk about treatment. Yeah.
Yes, please.
What do you do? Do you do anything to deal with this?
I feel like I've gone through a list of all options, and the list always grows, you know. So there's one clinic in the UK that helps to treat it. I think it's a place called Maudsley, but you have to be in the catchment area. It's not enough, really. We need more. Maybe there's one or two, I can't remember, but there's like various types of therapy. There's the lamotrigine sertraline combination. That again was just a study and there's no real proof. There's TMS treatments. I've tried TMS. Yeah, you and I went to the Smart TMS clinic, which I found really helped my depression. And they did say there was a less successful rate of helping depersonalization purely because of the lack of research. I didn't notice any change in my symptoms, unfortunately. I've been on sertraline, that actually made me disconnect more, I think, really, me personally. Now I just get regular therapy and I'm trying to process a lot of trauma in hopes that, I'll kind of unlock a feeling and come back.
And are there times, is this like pretty much all of your life, or are there times when you feel fairly like normal? And then times when you go, oh, I'm really spacing out, or is there just like different levels of spacing out?
It's an interesting one, really. I would say that like it's been pretty much constant. There was one in 2016. I remember I mentioned like when I was dreaming, I felt like there was a sudden switch and suddenly I was spaced out in my dreams as well. That was around the time when my life was very stressful. I think all that trauma kind of caught up with me and it felt like the feeling like got so much worse. That so I kind of say like that's when it got bad, but basically I experience it the same like all the time. It's just when I'm in more stressful situations or more high pressure situations, that's when I feel it, like I feel the effects of it more. Whereas if I'm at home like sitting down with a book and I'm safe, then I don't really care about it that much. It's still there, but like I don't have to like notice it. It's really hard when I'm like traveling or like I don't know, playing shows or something, because I feel like I should be more in it and I should be like experiencing it. It's like there's a compressor on my life where I feel like I always just like hit a wall of like how much I can feel. And when I'm in something that should be like amazing, I feel like I'm like plugging my ears because I can't get in it enough. It's very frustrating.
What can I just ask? So if you have a feeling that's like, so I know what it's like to sit in this room right now, right? What does it feel like right now that you imagine is different to the way it would feel like if you didn't have DEPD?
So if I close my eyes, I kind of just like, I literally, it's not like forget that everyone's here, but I could be fucking anywhere. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed
to. That's fine.
It just feels like I'm dead. It feels like, and if I get drunk, it gets like so much worse. I feel like I'm on like a thread of life. Like I'm hanging on by a tiny little thread. And I could just let go and die. I feel like I'm so close to death. I'm like, I'm barely alive right now. I'm just like not present at all. I don't know. So I feel like someone could just blow me away. As in like, gone. I have actually had like flashes of real. Like, and I mean flashes, like moments, like seconds of being like, oh my God, I'm back. And then like, not. Yeah. And I feel like, I remember one specifically, it felt like, and it does feel like it feels like everything is floating. And then if I feel real again, it feels like everything lands and I'm like, oh, I'm in a room and I can feel like all the walls around me and you're all there. And it just feels very solid and grounded. But right now it's all like up in the air and I'm just like, it's just like, I can't even describe it. It's so hard to put into words.
Is there anything that's ever like sort of lessened or brought that feeling on more?
The feeling of coming back.
Coming back, yeah.
The moment that I just described now, I actually I was smoking weed, and I think in every kind of like substance or whatever, a new area of life that I try, I'm always like, maybe this is the thing that will help. So when I was really high on weed, I was like, oh, maybe I can like really hyper focus and like be present. And I like focused on a Coke bottle on the ground for like so long. And then I really felt like everything fall. And I was like, oh my God. And it was like, there were two feelings. There was one that was like, oh God, this is terrifying. Like, this is way too present. I can't believe it. I can't believe I ever used to feel like this. And then there was one that was like, oh God, I knew it. I knew that it was so different. It's such a different feeling than to what I've been experiencing for the last 10 years. And it's so painful to know that like that those last, that decade has been so cloudy that I almost just want depersonalization back, because then at least, I don't know, it's just so painful to know that it's so different. Mm. Yeah, there's that. I will say, like, I could probably try a little harder, like maybe try and like practice like grounding techniques and that kind of thing. It's just so frustrating. It just gets really upsetting if you can't do it, and then you just feel like you're like hitting a wall again. But in terms of like helping with the stress, I like it when people massage me, yeah, or like touch me or like scratch me or like, yeah, a very like physical, because then right, it kind of like gets me back in my own body, and you'll see me like kind of scratching my arms or like fiddling or something, just so I can like feel grounded. Yeah.
Tell you what, your sort of description there reminded me of, I once smoked loads of weed and I got so paranoid. I got so scared, and oof, I thought I was in like, oh, I don't know where I was. I was in this like terrifying alternative realm, but it was still here, but it was like everyone was scheming against me and everyone was like watching me, and it was just a horrible place.
Man.
And I was like screaming and I was talking to people around me, and then I go, oh, I'm back. I'm back. I've got about 15 seconds. I'm back. I'm here. I'm okay. Please just continue doing these things that are really... And then I go back. I'm back. Whoa. I'm back. And it happened for about an hour. It was so weird. Is that right? Is that like not quite the same thing?
No,
but,
not really. No. But I did. I have had that experience on another substance where I feel like your brain kind of goes in like waves and cycles.
Don't try drugs.
No.
Don't do that. Unless your doctor says it's okay. You know, I think what's really interesting is that what we're talking about here, this sort of feeling of detachment, it's one of those things that can't really be solved by a lot of things people usually use to self-medicate. So we've spoken on the show before about how, say, psychedelics have been used for in mental health research, and weed has also been used in mental health research. But both of those kinds of classes of drugs can bring on an experience of pulling yourself
like,
away from that.
It's research. It's not at all a cure. Like, we're so far from knowing what helps, because, like I said, it can have, like, terrifying
effect. The opposite effect of what you might want.
And I just think it's interesting that these sort of, we talk about sort of meditation and, like I said, psychedelics and weed, all of these things can bring yourself away from sort of your sort of conscious mind, let's say. And those are all kind of used as treatments, or have been researched as treatments for certain mental health disorders. But in this case, it seems almost the opposite of what you want to do. Mm. You want to ground yourself, and these are things that are often used to do the opposite. Mm. So it is difficult, like, because when we're researching what works, we really don't know. I mean, with the TMS, so for example, like, just for anyone that doesn't know, TMS is essentially shocking a part of your brain.
It's transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yeah, it's not shocking.
It's not shocking.
Like that.
Yeah,
are they not like that?
No, because it's not shocking. Because there's electroshock therapy as well, which is not what
it's not that. It's like a big magnet, and it just like stimulates. It's essentially like massaging a part of your brain that might be lacking in like stimulation. So, for the depression side of my brain, they sort of focused on this part here.
Yeah.
The left side.
This side is anxiety. I think that's right.
I don't know. Mine was this side.
That's they did both. They did one here
I think you probably had depression.
They just did one for you.
I did that because that was depression. Then they tried DPD over here. Yeah.
Wow.
Which made my jaw.
I had this thing here for anxiety because I had an awful lot of anxiety. Mm. But yeah, it's almost like a magnetic charger.
Yeah.
It's like your brain.
It just like tries to like get blood flow back, really. And it really helped for my depression. I really, really felt like it helped, but didn't feel anything for me.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. We don't actually have any specific treatment. We've noticed that antidepressants can help for the depression, but not necessarily for the DPD itself. Mm. There's hypnotherapy that has been tried.
I've tried hypnotherapy.
You tried hypnotherapy? Mm. You just gone to, I could go through the, have you gone through the list?
Yeah. Yeah, I've tried hypnotherapy, tried EMDR, tried, sertraline. What else? Tried TMS. Mm. A bunch. What else is on there?
That is
pretty much it, guys.
You've gone through the list.
Yeah.
No, honestly, and usually, right, I'd have a lot of good research on this is what we think works. That's we don't have a lot of good ideas for what actually works.
Yeah.
So we just don't know very much about it. And I mean, in the description, obviously, you'll see all of the sort of studies that I've looked at, the books where I've got this from. But it is in its infancy, and like the start of these papers, they're saying, this is something that we don't know much about. It's under research. We need to do more research. Mm-hmm. So this episode is really obviously science light because we don't know very much about it. But yeah, I mean, that is pretty much all I've got for DPD.
Yeah, it's pretty much how much the world has got for DPD.
Yeah, I mean,
the entire history. Yeah.
No, honestly, I'm glad we had you here because, I mean, it is one thing to be able to read sort of papers from people who have spoken to people that have sort of have it, but then it's another thing entirely for someone who has the experience and has done a lot of their own research to come in and share that with us. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And it's not every day we get someone on that's actually gone through the thing that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Who's currently experiencing it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I will say it can feel very isolating. But there are a lot of resources. I'm part of a charity called Unreal. I'm an ambassador for Unreal, which is the UK's first charity for depersonalization, derealization. And they do, I think, like monthly sessions as well. There's also a lot of just like information about the condition. So feel free to check it out if you are curious or experience the symptom.
Yeah, we'll link that in the description then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to add? Anything else that's...
I have an album out. It's called Build a Bronze.
I mean, I think we've covered it. We could talk about consciousness. We could talk about split brain stuff, but it's kind of more tangential. Well, if you're good for time, I mean,
sure,
I actually wondered.
Don't you
about,
always talk about split brains?
I love split brains because it revealed so many things about the world and about our brains to me because there was all these things about like, so, for example, I don't know if you've seen any of the stuff I talked about with it, but like, for example, if you split brain is what happens when you have epilepsy. It's a treatment for epilepsy, and
I've done a little research.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things that happens is that like, if you cover one eye,
One hand will draw the other. No. Okay.
So if you cover one eye and you make this side of the brain on this eye with this eye, I can't remember which side, but side of the brain, like you show it something that makes it laugh, then you ask the other side, which is the only one that can access the voice box, why it laughed. And it doesn't know because it didn't see that side. So it will make up a reason as to why it laughed. It will go, this thing over here looked like something that a childhood friend of mine had and I found them really funny, so that's why I laughed. And it revealed this aspect, I don't know if it was known before, but it revealed this part of the brain that's just trying to make sense of the world.
Whoa.
And it doesn't actually matter whether that's true. It matters that it stays consistent with your beliefs about yourself or your beliefs about the world.
That's terrifying.
Sort of weaving a consistent narrative that has
that's
nothing
terrifying.
To do with reality.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God.
And usually it has access to the other hemisphere. So in like most people, it has other data. It does have the full data and the narrative will probably be slightly more accurate. But if it doesn't have that, it doesn't just go, I don't know. It just makes stuff up. So you know when you have people who it just kind of feels like they're just making something up, right? And it just feels like they just make something up and then you kind of press them on it and they go, yeah, I don't know why I said that. Like, I don't know if that's specifically the causation of that in that case, but there is a function of the brain that does that.
Yeah.
You bringing that up, I've been reading a book that goes into all of this. I've been reading it recently. And there is, I can't remember quite the name of the disorder, but through some degree of brain damage to a particular area, it results in people not having a good sort of arbitration system for what is true and what is false. So if you've got sort of two conflicting things, okay, so for example, let's say someone, they go blind on one side of their, on one side, or let's say they paralyze one side of their face, right? They are in complete denial that their face is paralyzed, but not sort of conscious denial, as in they are completely unaware of it. Their brain is in denial of it. Mm-hmm. So you can show them, you can say, okay, now close both of your eyes and put them in front of a mirror, and they'll only be able to close one of their eyes, obviously. And you'll say to them, are both of your eyes closed? And they'll say, yes. And then, you'll say to them, okay, now, if you're both your eyes are closed, then why can you see yourself in the mirror? And they'll be like, yeah, I can see myself in the mirror. And they're like, so if both your eyes are closed, then why can you see yourself in the mirror? And they'll just sit in silence for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then they'll just move on. They'll forget about it. Because
what?
Because the arbitration system sort of in their brain between what's true and what isn't true just does not work. So it will sit and it will work through it. And it'll be like,
well, oh my God, we are not in control.
Yeah.
There's no way to resolve that.
There's no way to resolve it. So it's just like, okay. Whereas in our minds, right? Because our system for that is functioning, we'd be like, okay, all right, well, I can see myself. But also I think both my eyes are closed. But I can see myself. Therefore, one of my eyes must be open at least. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we'd resolve that. But if that part of your brain is broken, you can't resolve it.
Oh my God. Have you guys ever read that book? Do you know what I'm going to say? The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat?
No.
Oh my God.
This is amazing.
Is this a narrative or a non-fiction? Oh my God. It's non-fiction.
Wow.
It's a series of kind of like short, chapters about people who have different neurological conditions. It was about this guy who, I think he was either a doctor or like an assistant to a doctor who would find people with different neurological conditions. It's like quite old, like maybe, I don't even know, 20s? I don't know. It's just like each chapter is about people who like, there's one chapter who, and he described it so well. This man comes in and he's like, he like sleeps in a hospital, and then in the middle of the night they hear a thump and they go outside and he's like on the floor and they're like, what's wrong? And he's like, well, there was a leg in my bed. It wasn't my leg. And he's like clutching his own leg and they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, this is not my leg. Like, get it off me. And he's like, chop this thing off. This is not my leg. There's like that. There's one where this woman like has this dream where she's like floating and she's like, I had this really weird dream. And he's like, you'll be all right. Next day she loses her proprioception. So she's just like doing this because she's literally flailing her limbs. She can't walk because she doesn't know where her limbs are. There's like the man who mistook his wife for a hat. His neurological problem was that he kind of like recognized like the shapes of things, and that's how he got along in the world, but like would kind of like see something. So like when he was like ready to go, he like grabbed his wife's head and she's like this, and he's like, oh sorry, I thought that was a hat because it was round and furry, so he just thought it was a hat. Like, so many interesting things. You have to read this book. You have to.
Definitely will. I definitely heard will of this before. It's so interesting. I think honestly the kind of unifying thing of all of this is that what I think everyone should understand is that you're not necessarily as in control of what's going on in your head as you think. There are a lot of systems and subsystems and parts of your brain that are just kind of running anyway. Mm. And this kind of conscious mind, as far as we're aware, doesn't necessarily, we don't have strong evidence to say that your conscious mind has strong control over your unconscious mind.
Yeah.
And we don't have a strong evidence to say that it doesn't, but we don't really have evidence to say, yep, your consciousness controls everything that's going on, because you can remove a lot of the consciousness and a lot of the things will keep on going on. And I think it's interesting to bring that into sort of DPD, where your conscious mind feels separate from everything that's going on, but everything's still you feel separate from yourself, but everything is still functioning. Mm. And it reminded me, we were talking about split brains earlier. There's this thing called alien hand syndrome, where essentially you can split the brain at the corpus callosum, the bit where the sort of left hemisphere and the right hemisphere of the brain sort of share information through. Mm-hmm. So you've got two separate hemispheres of the brain, essentially. One controls one half of the body and the other controls the other half. You can have one hand trying to say, feed you. And you're like, Stop trying to feed me. What are you doing? But because the two parts of your brain can't communicate, like essentially you've got two fighting sort of consciousness living in one head. One of them just can't sort of vocalize or speak for themselves or do anything.
Same thing as when you, if one side doesn't agree with the clothes you're putting on,
the other side
will like intervene. Like you're trying to put on a t-shirt and that side doesn't want that t-shirt. And it goes like, stop it. The thing I found so interesting about this is you mentioned that the link for me with DPD is that you mentioned that epilepsy drugs might be helpful in the treatment of DPD. And obviously cutting a corpus callosum is also helpful in treating epilepsy. So I wondered if there was any kind of connection there or any hypothesized connection.
No research as far as I'm aware. Okay. I wouldn't want to make a hypothesis because I don't want someone trying to cut their brain. But no, really, I think the thing is that all of these things kind of bring you on to asking the questions of, well, what is consciousness? Because I mean, in your sort of day-to-day life, this experience of sort of feeling almost separate from yourself, right? It's something that most people don't necessarily have to experience very often. So it's something you don't necessarily consider. And so you could ignore you can ignore the questions that that brings up about consciousness. But the fact that there are some people that sort of do experience this quite consistently.
Yeah.
I mean, it does open many doors. It does ask many questions about sort of what is going on inside our heads.
Well, that's the thing as well, is that because we don't know what consciousness is, and we sort of, science assumes it's being generated by the brain, but we actually have no idea. Like, for all intents and purposes, you could be in a different universe controlling a transformer from across the universe, and you would have no idea.
I need to interject and say, yeah, we don't know. We don't know, but also...
Probably not.
We don't think it's that.
It's more... Right. We have to take the world that we're given at face value, right? Yeah. So we can't prove that the mind isn't being projected in, sure, but we can't prove that it is being projected.
Absolutely.
In. And if with that sort of theory of, oh, there's this extra dimension where our minds are being generated, there is currently no way of proving that because we can't interact with that dimension in any way. So while that could be true, science has to ignore it. Otherwise, you start bringing in questions that just can't be answered.
Of course.
Sorry, Colin.
No, I now have no idea what I was going to talk about. But what I was interested in as well was like, oh, okay, so if you are, at the very least, if you are, you know, you have this part of your brain that is sort of narrating what's going on and is trying to make sense of your actions. And then, like Corey said, we don't know whether your actual consciousness has then got control over the full body. And again, trigger warning, trippy thoughts. But like, so for example, if you go to touch a stove, the signal goes up your hand to your spine, and your spine tells your hand to move before that signal's even reached the brain. That's weird. That roughly correct?
It's a reflex action. Yeah, it hits your central nervous system before it hits. But it hits, yeah. Yeah.
You, the conscious decider, doesn't actually move the hand. And also, you make the assumption, I guess, that you are making the decisions you make because you internally experience the thought process that leads to the decisions. If I think, I might move my hand over there and give James a pat on the head, and then, yes, I am going to do that. And then I do it. I assume that I did the things that led up to that. Mm-hmm. But also I could be just consciousness observing that entire decision chain.
Taking place.
And then making the assumption that I did
that. Isn't it true that like you've already made the decision before you do it?
Yeah. So this is really... I'm so glad I was reading that book, but I was.
You can whip it out.
I was meeting a friend today. I was late in getting ready because I was so interested in this book. So I was like, this is so good for today. So there is some evidence to suggest for really simple things like lifting a finger. So it's not necessarily, we can't say that all decisions happen before you've decided to do it. But with something like lifting a finger, if you look at a brain scan, there's a sort of storm of neural activity there's three different things. So you ask people to basically, let me go back to the start and I'll just say what the experiment is, right? So you've got people sitting in front of a screen that's got a timer on it, right? And you tell them, okay, lift your finger at a certain point. And you also ask them to remember at what time they saw when they decided to lift their finger, and you measure what time it was when they sort of lifted their finger, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can see, obviously, they decide to lift their finger before their finger moves. We'd expect that. But there's also, and there's a sort of increase in neural activity when they decide to lift their finger. Makes sense. But also, before they've decided to lift their finger, there's a noticeable increase in neural activity, like a second beforehand. So a second before they've realized that they've decided to move their finger, their unconscious mind has decided that they're going to
move their finger.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
So essentially, what we can gather from this is for like at least very simple things like lifting a finger, it may not be the case for more complex actions, but at least for this, it seems that we don't actually decide to do it. We just tell ourselves that we've decided to do it after our unconscious mind has already made us do it.
Your unconscious decides to tell your conscious to decide.
So that why that comes is relevant, I guess, is that you're experiencing these moments where you feel like... I'm not really doing this. I'm just watching it happen, right? And I guess it might be that actually the rest of us are just assuming we are doing it.
Mm. Right. I will say, you know that feeling of like, I feel like I'm watching myself. I think with depersonalization, it's not really I feel like I'm detached. I think the I in that sentence is dimmed, you know? Like, it's not like I feel like I can't like I can't reach myself. It's more like I am no longer 100%. It's really hard to describe.
Like you're going unconscious.
Yeah, it's like the eye is dimmed. Like it's not like I am. It's not like I am watching myself from above, because that suggests that the real you, like the ego more sort of awake. Thing. It's more like the more awake, not spaced out you can't reach the real you. It's more like I am less present.
Like you're, so like you're kind of.
It's like when people talk about. Sorry. It's like when people talk about mental health with like depression. It's like, oh, I will just. You know, I'll fight depression. But how can you fight it when you have it, you know?
Mm. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Is it like you're experiencing you diminishing rather than your what?
My soul, like I am diminished. Yeah. I am diminished. Yeah. Like I am less.
That's the interesting thing is when you're talking about this experiment, like you decide to do this, but by you mean the brain and the full system,
right.
Not you, the consciousness observing the system. Because those are two different yous. And you're saying that you, the consciousness observing, is sort of less. Fading away.
Yes, correct. That is exactly what it feels like.
I think this is the thing, right? A lot of people think the you, the sort of conscious, a lot of people experience the sort of you as the consciousness that is observing. But they just assume that that is everything, right?
Right.
As in, I think with most people, they'll be like, oh yeah, I did this, I did that. And they'll be like, oh yeah, I'm moving my arm, I'm deciding to do all this stuff.
But you
that
are
is all me.
A combination of so many things.
Yeah. Mm. And upon reading this book, I mean, this is stuff I'd been reading already, but this book goes into some really great depth. It's in the description. I think it's called Incognito. You should all read it. Mm-hmm. It's very good.
I got it with you.
This is one I made earlier.
This is one I prepared earlier. There it is.
Oh, cool.
It's on my notes. It's a great book. But
wow, I can't wait to read that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll lend it to you once I'm done with it.
You told me you were going to lend it to me.
Whoa.
You can both read a book.
Jesus. Oh, yeah.
No, but the whole point...
You can have it, don't worry. I'll get it on Audible. I can't pay attention to written text. Who am I kidding?
I can't read.
I just wanted to feel like the victim for a moment.
Just making an anecdote.
So the thing is that what this book kind of goes into is the idea that there are many, many, many systems that make up the sort of unconscious, and they're all layered. And then there is also the conscious mind, which is potentially one of the smallest parts of that, that exists basically to kind of say, that exists basically to sort of make sense of the world and also adapt. Right? Because you can have a lot of dumb systems, and I say dumb as in they do one particular thing, and that is their job, and they're very good at that. You can have a lot of dumb systems, but if you don't have a sort of smart sort of overview system that can sort of say, okay, well, this system isn't working for this task, so we'll use this one mm-hmm. instead. If you don't have that, then it can be difficult to adapt and learn. And there is, and I'm not saying this is specifically what the conscious mind is, this is just one idea that someone has, that the conscious mind exists as a way of adapting to environments. And that's why you would see maybe some animals that are better at adapting having more consciousness.
I saw a talk by a guy called Joshua Bach once, and he talked, he's an AI expert, and he talked about like the conscious self as though it was a sort of simulation the brain was running. So your brain is like just getting on with life. It's a bunch of cells basically trying to get resources and replicate and all that kind of stuff that cells do. And they're sort of like this giant, you're like this gigantic, weird conglomeration of billions of cells that are all pretending to be a person, right? They're all doing the same task together, right? Like, you know, like if you have loads, if you like in Rick and Morty, there's loads of ants and they all make the form of a human. But actually, they're loads of ants, but they're also a thing, right?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what cells are doing.
This is a hilarious episode for people who are spaced out to this. Hilarious.
And so, Joshua,
everything you fear might be true.
He was describing how the brain could basically. As far as I took it, this is how I took it. I don't know his exact words, but like your conscious self could be like a simulation that is being run that's basically going, okay, if we were one thing, what would we do? We're not, but what if we were? So basically, so mm-hmm. that you, this like gigantic machine of all these different individual parts, all these different parts of the brain that are all trying to maximize for different motives and different all these things. Mm. You have this one thing that brings all that information together, all those different processes together, kind of like what you're saying, and goes, okay, if we were actually an individual rather than cells that vanish off and fly off and skin cells fall off all the time and you get your body replaces every 7 years, how would we act? How would we behave? And then that interacts with other simulations of individuals in other people.
You've described government.
Like a country is doing.
Yeah, so a country is a group of is individual people and infrastructure in a specific area, right? Now, all those individual people could go and do their normal stuff. Some of them will die. Some of them will make more people that do jobs. All of that stuff, mm-hmm. right? Without a government... Okay, anarchists, stop listening, please.
don't interact.
Let's just hypothetically, without a government, it would be very difficult to sort of direct that large group as a country, right? But a government is this thing that is the consciousness of the country that decides, okay, well, this is where we allocate those resources, this is where we do this and that, and it interacts with other governments of other countries that creates the world, blah, blah, blah.
Cool.
It's interesting to apply how we think the system of consciousness works to other sort of simulated systems of consciousness. Mm-hmm. That are larger than ourselves.
Countries aren't real.
No, they're not.
Social construct.
Cool. But look, this is the right to bring it back. Look, I think what we've spoken about today is it's a lot. I don't really know how to sum that up. What's going on? What's happening?
Well, we don't know.
Brain hurt.
We don't know.
We don't know.
But lots of people are suffering. So let's try and find out, please. Boris, get some fun.
Boris, Bojo.
You're giving me a really harsh stare there. Look, I'm really, I don't want to have to work this one out.
I'm projecting Boris onto you.
Thank you very much.
I think whatever, I'm just grateful to talk about it always because it needs more awareness, I guess.
Yeah.
So it can get more, to be recognized and get funding. Mm. There was something to do with, do you know what NICE is?
Oh, nice.
Is that? It's something to do with being recognized or something.
It's the National Institute of Care Excellence or something.
I think that's correct.
Yeah. It's essentially for, I think, the NHS in the UK. It's basically, they set the standards of care for the NHS.
Basically, hasn't been recognized by that.
Really?
I think, or properly, or something like that. Oh, God, please don't quote me.
Health and Care Excellence.
Hmm. Cool. I've not spoken about it since I was in uni. So,
no, the H is silent for some reason. It should be nice,
nice.
Yeah.
Basically, it just needs to be more there.
That's so interesting that it's not been actually recognized.
God, again, please don't go me on that. I might not be right, but I think that's true. We were talking about it yesterday.
I mean, do you have any advice for anyone that might be going through this that isn't really sure what to do?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's always good to go get on the NHS system for mental health, even just to get a diagnosis. It's a long process, as you know, the NHS and mental health system isn't the best, but might as well get on it now for support. Connect. There's a lot of online groups, like I mentioned. Unreal, the charity, is a nice little hub for people. Just talk about it and explain it, and aside from that, I don't know, find what helps you and try and communicate that to your friends.
Great, fantastic advice. Yeah. I think that's a great way to end the show. Don't you guys think?
Yes. I completely agree. Next?
Before we end, we've got one little thing to do. One little thing.
It's always the thing.
It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh my God.
So Dodie, you've not been here before, but we do have this thing called the quick fire quiz. I will ask one question. It's one question between the three of you. Mm. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins, but...
It is really quick.
It is really quick. Oh, but God. I do have to finish asking the question before you can buzz in with your answer.
Okay.
We all got that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Jamp, what is your buzzer?
Oh, I haven't thought this far ahead yet.
Very good buzzer. Luke, what is your buzzer? Go.
I have thought this far ahead, actually.
Dodie.
Is that your buzzer?
Yeah, his buzzer and my buzzer. Yeah.
what's your buzzer?
That's a really long thing to say.
Fantastic buzzer. Buzzer.
Oh, I love this.
Oh, God.
I didn't think we'd get you on that.
Oh, God. Okay.
So my question for you three is, And remember, I need to finish asking the question before you can buzz in with your answer. Roughly what percentage of people are affected by DPD?
Oh my gosh.
Dodie, yeah?
What? We said like over 1%, so like 2% of people.
Yeah, bang on. That's right.
Yeah.
And again, the real answer is
we're not sure.
Out of interest, I thought that was a stat that Dodie brought. Did you have that as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe
Dodie said 1%, and I said less than 2%.
Oh.
Oh.
Cool. I was only listening to Dodie.
Luke, it's been 2 years. The face of depersonalization. I'm not.
Sorry, the face that you made when you realized what you'd said.
I'm the face of depersonalization. That's a weird face the depersonalization has.
And that is the thumbnail. There we go.
That's the
when Nice finally accepts it. That'll be on the website. It's you in that face.
The face.
No, congrats, Dodie. Well done for winning. I mean, is there anything else you want to mention? I mean, maybe
did I win? Or did I just yell really loud?
You hurt my ears and I wanted it to stop. Is there anything else?
That's your buzzer.
Is there anything else you want to mention? Anything that you want anyone to check out? Maybe, I don't know, an album, some music or something?
Well, I do have an album out. It's called Build a Problem. And there's a song in it called Before the Line, which is about depersonalization, actually. So, relevant. Cool. It's available on all streaming platforms and as physical copies. And you should come to my shows in the UK or the US.
We will put it in the 100%. Description.
Oh, yeah.
Just in case you'd never heard of Dodie's album, it is called Build a Problem, not Build a Problem. Like a problem with your builder. Because that's what I thought you said. Oh, man. It's a whole album about my bad builder.
Do not spoil the second album, Luke. Honestly, it is coming.
I'd imagine like a Builder Bear shop. You go, yeah. Build a Problem.
It's a dumb title. I don't really know.
You also mentioned you might have done something with Unreal.
Yes. So Unreal is, like I said, the UK charity for depersonalization. And there was a sort of press event launch on Zoom, which should be going up on their YouTube channel on Tuesday. And that had a lot of people's own experiences and symptoms in it. Just a lot of information, really. And it was, pretty cool to not feel alone. So, yeah, that's going out Tuesday.
Nice. Great, fantastic. Yeah. Well, you can find links to all of those things in the description.
Yeah.
But I think we've just got one more thing to do. We've just got to thank all of our patrons. So here we go.
Thank you to Juanita Darte.
Thank you to Anna Geisler.
Thank you to Anoni May.
Thank you, Ash Palmer.
Thank you to Tabby.
Thank you to Katie E.
Thank you, Valerie Urso.
Thank you to Lou Irving.
Thank you, Ava Winston.
Thank you, Zuni.
Thank you, Cassidy Hall.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Joshua.
Thank you, Hallelujah. Ooh, or Hallelujah, even.
Thank you, Dylan Masson Vanderbrink.
Great name. Thank you, Puck Peters. Also great name.
Fantastic.
Thank you to Rachie May.
Thank you to Klaus.
Thank you to Brienne.
Thank you to Annabelle.
Thank you to Drew.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you to Finn TZ.
Thank you to Christina La Forteza.
Thank you, Carissa Smitherman.
Thank you to Verdi Birdie.
That's a brilliant one.
I love that.
Bird.
Thank you to Whitney Grayton.
Thank you, Emily Gudgeon Osterita.
Thank you to Hudson.
Thank you to Brooklyn. Those are
Thank
both.
You.
Those are both New York. New York themed ones there to the end. Some really good names this month.
Thank
Fantastic.
You to the Hudson River. And
so many of you.
The city of Brooklyn.
Brooklyn's a borough.
It's a borough
in New York.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alongside Queens and the others.
I was gonna name Harlem.
Harlem.
Oh, there's the one with the weird. There's five. I think there's the one with the weird name. This is unrelated. Sorry. Thank you to all of our patrons.
The rest of you should be patrons.
Thank you to all of our patrons. We will thank you if you become a patron and sign up at our patreon.com/SciGuys. You also get other bonus things like a bonus episode, loads of cool stuff. But I think it's time to finish the episode now, is it not?
100%.
But before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Ashley Muller and Finn TZ. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
Dodie needs to do it.
That's gmail.com.
You can follow me at notcorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jampkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at Doddle
everywhere. Oh god.
YouTube accounts we made when we were teenagers.
Cyber Dodie.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.